Blog Talk Radio.
Madam and Messrs. of Maison Farm, welcome to another edition of DOCR 2012, broadcasting around the world on the Terra Jet Radio Network. Phone lines shall be open for this full edition, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. Got an opinion? Got an idea? Want to make a statement? 347-324-3287. VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rocket. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Guru Nostra.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the VOCR. Hope everyone is well. I wish we could meet more often with the volume of information now available on the internet. But the curses of having to earn a living in the concrete jungle. If only there was another way of keeping those nasty financial wolves at bay. Maybe win a lottery. Become independently wealthy by inheritance. Maybe find a benefactor. Or simply drop off the grid and head for the mountains. Grab the supplies, a laptop, satellite phone, and a generator, and off we go. Now, I'm sure after tonight's broadcast, there will be some of those wolves of finance who we call out each week who may not be too pleased with me again this week. So goes the territory. If you get the urge to call throughout the show, the phone line shall be live. Agreement with what I say or dispute with what I say? Phone lines are active.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
If you decide to email or wish your comment to be read on the air at a later date, make sure in the email on the regarding line you mark comment. Make sense? So, if you would like to email the show and comment, feel free to do so. VOCR2012@gmail.com. Tonight, we shall no doubt agitate the financial wolves and those others who have axes to grind as we continue to look at the global economy and its impending collapse. Now, also, we'll try and get to internet chat. Now, don't go slashing your wrists yet.
In recent months, people across the Middle East have bravely stood to demand that their government respect their fundamental rights. I've stood with a gentleman from Indiana on behalf of human rights around the world. The Libyan people, who have been subject to the dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi, who has more blood on his hands, of Americans' blood on his hands, than any other person other than Osama bin Laden in the last three decades. The message will go to all the world. The message will go to Muammar Gaddafi. The message will go to our NATO allies. The message will go to every nation of the world that America does not keep faith with its allies. America must lead. We must not equivocate. Such a course would encourage the enemies of peace, the bullies of the world. People around the world look to our country's strength in their struggle for democracy and basic human rights.
I think we have to carry out the UN resolution that calls for the right to protect, or the obligation and duty to protect. That's why the Libyan situation started. That needs to be completed. I would suggest that the Hastings resolution that gives a year is good in that it provides the necessary restrictions on the White House and on the military in the Libya operation and basically puts the United States in a support position.
We will not police its streets or patrol its mountains indefinitely. That is the responsibility of the Afghan government, which must step up its ability to protect its people and move from an economy shaped by war to one that can sustain a lasting peace.
We've been in Afghanistan for 10 years at a cost of over $500 billion. In Iraq for 8 years at a long-term cost of at least $3 trillion. Those who told us the war in Libya would last days now want to extend it for another year at a total cost of billions. It is surreal that we could even be considering authorizing this war at a time when the government is collapsing in debt. We must put an end not only to the war in Libya, but we must put an end to the thinking that the Constitution is a doormat and that our constituents must simply bear the consequences of the misguided policies of this administration without this Congress having any say whatsoever.
Even the administration says Libya is not a national security risk to America. So why are we at war in Libya? Because the French want us there? Mr. Speaker, don't you think we've done enough for the French in World War I, World War II, and even in Indochina, what we now call Vietnam? The United States should not be involved in Libya's civil war. The cost has been over $700 million to the American taxpayer. Mr. Speaker, don't you think that money, that millions of dollars, could be better spent building America instead of blowing up Libya?
To hurt Grandma, take her Medicare and Social Security away, and make it so a little junior can't go to college, and it's the doomsday scenario. But the fact is, the doomsday is upon us because we've sinned to oblivion. And we're going to have to at some point accept the discipline of saying we just can't keep spending. And it doesn't matter where the spending goes. When you're broke, which we are, at some point you have to own up to it and quit spending money. It's
VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockies.
Economic crisis we face demands that we invest immediately in a series of measures that will help save or create 2.5 million jobs and put tax cuts in the pockets of the hard-pressed middle class. Many of those new jobs will come in areas such as energy independence, technology, and healthcare modernization that will strengthen.
Your host, Colin Knight.
I was getting a little worried there. I thought maybe the station had gone automated and somebody hadn't told me. My God, that was a long intro. Good evening, everyone. Before we get into the meat tonight, although the intro obviously took it right into the fight with Libya, special shout out to the wall-building, plant-loving, broomstick-riding, landscaping supervisor who definitely deserves at least a Timmy's. Union, huh? If I had your money, I'd burn mine. To the BC Dreamcatcher, is it summer yet? Ready for a road trip? Mike from Orlando, yes, the Calgary Stampede is soon upon us for 10 days. And those 10 days, what happens in Calgary stays in Calgary. And the Southeast Brickies, much better half. Good to know you're there, Beth. And of course, the Scottish Heather. Hope your wing is mended. Give my regards to Bob and his brother. Give me a buzz sometime. One of our listeners sent an email asking how we decide on the theme of the show. So let's take you through quickly through the process. Our research group is comprised of a number of independent services and engaged readers, listeners, individuals who supply our news information feed requests. They provided by email independent news links of various kinds, various political persuasions into this informational pool. And now, why do I tell you this? Because it's from this daily soup of news from around the world, from a number of sources that form our daily reading material, which eventually is used to formulate the show each week. Now, it does change from time to time based on any breaking stories or anything going hot towards the end of the week. But the team at the VOCR 2012 are well known for thinking outside of the political box, and many stories break after reporting through the VOCR. So keep an eye on the blog, vocr2012.blogspot.com. Here's a brain scratcher. I read recently that presidential hopeful Mitt Romney is heading for England to fundraise. Apparently, he's bucking the tradition by announcing he would skip August's Iowa straw poll. Now, Romney, in the midst of a money-raising push, is planning to travel across the pond for the July 6 fundraiser. Apparently, this fundraiser will be held at an upscale Dartmouth house near Hyde Park, and the fundraiser will be co-chaired by financial heavy hitters like Raj Bhattacharya, the managing director of Deutsche Bank, and the hedge fund manager Louis Bacon, and Woody Johnson, owner of the New York Jets. So to a large degree, they do support Mitt Romney because he's well known as someone who has the skills and the capabilities to turn around the economy. While some of the Republican field are struggling to find money, Romney is soon projected to break the quarterly fundraising record in a year before a presidential election. Now, stay with me on this. After learning of Romney's visit, or planned visit, some of our friends did some sniffing around on the social register of Europe's elite, which reveals a number of influential advisors on the IMF and the World Bank protocols appear to have no engagements, which usually signals business meetings or personal time. Has Romney been summoned to London by the Carlyle Group? Has the House of Hanover chosen this time as the eyes of the press and the world shall be on William and Kate in America? Now, the Queen is scheduled to be at Balmoral, a very nice place for a quiet cup of tea. Wouldn't it be interesting if this candidate, Romney, made a trip to Balmoral to audition for the part as the president? Now, we attempted to get a comment from the Illuminati. However, they're just not answering their phone. They have a loop message of global population control, and that's it. I read an interview recently highlighting Gary Johnson, the ex-governor of New Mexico. Seems a little kooky, but he does get your attention. He has a smooth delivery. He apparently advocates legalizing marijuana, claims the cost of enforcement could be better spent elsewhere. What do you think?
Looking for more information on VOCR? Check out our blog at vocr2012.blogspot.com. Email the show, vocr2012@gmail.com. You're listening to VOCR 2012 with Colin Knight. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although it takes all precautions to bring you quality information, it is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVNM 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
So yeah, Gary Johnson, ex-governor of New Mexico, advocating the legalizing of marijuana, claims the cost of enforcement could be better spent elsewhere. Well, I don't know. Gary Johnson. Couldn't be watching that fella. I read a story recently where they're considering examining the remains of William Shakespeare because apparently he may have been stoned on pot while writing his plays. Seriously. Apparently marijuana was common in England at the time and it was a well-known pleasure for actors. Now, I'm sure someone in normal organization, that's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Law, will be getting the quote ready to use. Shakespeare stoned. Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him well. They're saying that each candidate who is serious about becoming president of the United States will be expected to raise at least $1 billion. $1 billion for a job which pays $500,000 a year for a maximum of 8 years. Things that make you go, Well, rumors and rumbles in the political soup tend to lend themselves to the belief that, for whatever reason, President Barack Obama shall not be at the finish line in 2012. In fact, he may himself choose not to run a second term as late as June 2012. Now, it's doubtful that Obama would relinquish his position willingly, even through a scandal. And although the FBI have announced that they are apparently actively looking into Barack Hussein Obama's claimed records, it is doubtful if found to be a usurper, as Alan Keyes calls him, that he would just not finish his presidency and the case would take years, if ever it made it to court at all. So, you know, the idea that there would be a fast turnaround would not happen. So many of those people in the chat rooms that got this strange conspiracy theory that they can throw Obama out and quickly replace him, the process doesn't work that way. Now, some blame Obama's administration for the economic failure of the stimulus package. Others, because of the continued cost of war after promising campaign withdrawals. Redcoat Democrats continue to blame Bush and his economical butchery of the deficit. And the old guard, of course, remember the creative financing of Bill Clinton, who balanced the books over 25 years and tied failure of economic diversities over a 25-year timed event, allowing the free market to absorb the failure over 25 years. Governments and big business around the world carry at least two sets of books as standard operating procedure. Neither are probably accurate in this case, and the debt load created by nations could never be repaid in currency or property, because that much physical money just does not exist. 80% of all money transfers on Earth are electronic. Now, what if an electromagnetic wave wiped out those services? 80% of the world's wealth would be vaporized into binary confetti. Where would the world be the day after that event? How about the loss of electricity by terrorism or cosmic inbounds? What if you had to exist without electric current of any kind, battery or plug-in power? What if the electronic world was obliterated by a sun flare and the repair was not an option? Do you have a method of commerce? No bank machines, no debit or credit cards, just a change in the pocket or purse. And will that be the currency of trade? Unfortunately, as we look at the politics around the world, we fail to understand the politics within our own society. My point being here tonight in opening is that our economic bubble created by trade over the last few thousand years is like a cracked eggshell. It's being held together by an inner membrane of finance. And if that membrane breaks, which according to some analysts is about to happen, the eggshell structure will be unstable, and the egg shall eventually collapse. It could happen in a day, it could happen in a month, or never. The chances that it will happen has been touted as a very good possibility. Now, people make huge livings speculating on costs. They rate the success of failure. They rate the failures and the success of diverse crop managements. They set the bench prices for simple staples in the future. The economy which is crashing is an economy made by man. And maybe, like the moneylenders being thrown out of the temple by Jesus Christ, it is time to reset the financial understanding of mortal life. Now, I read about the rapes and the murders by terrorists and rebels, the insanity of the men murdering ex-lovers and family, the hatchet-wielding children's armies which are drugged into a frenzy and made to commit atrocities. The world is full of hate. It appears as though the whole world is angry at someone or something. Politics is about hate. Stick your head into a political chat room sometimes on Paltalk or Yahoo. Politics is about hate. Republicans hate Democrats and vice versa. And if a liberal or a conservative submits an idea, it is automatically wrong because of auto-opposition. The idea has no value. The fact the opposition submitted it proves it has no merit. Certain religions, although claiming peace, actually practice openly their religious hates. Fundamental Islamic terrorists spout passages of their religious text, which continues to incite hate against the West. According to the Muslims I know, who actually read the Quran, say the claims that terrorists make in the name of their God do not appear in any way in the teachings of Allah. And I am pleased to know that Muslims accept Jesus Christ as a prophet. At least, it's a start, isn't it?
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although it takes all precautions to bring you quality information, it is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR.
In 16 months, we should be able to reduce our combat troops, provide some relief to military families and our troops, and bolster our efforts in Afghanistan so that we can capture and kill bin Laden and crush al-Qaeda.
We need to express our rights and our concerns, and we don't have to second guess what their efforts would be if they believe that it is in their country and their allies, including us, all of our best interests to fight against a regime, especially Iran, who would seek to wipe them off the face of the earth. It is obvious to me who the good guys are in this one and who the bad guys are.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
As we go flying through the show tonight, news breaking that Gaddafi is seriously considering fleeing Tripoli. That's according to U.S. officials. Now, this could be propaganda, folks. You know how that goes. However, he would be smart to be leaving Tripoli. It sounds like that the rebel forces are doing quite well out there. New U.S. intelligence shows Colonel Muammar al-Qaddafi is seriously considering fleeing Tripoli for a more secure location outside the capital, raising the prospect that Libyan leaders hold on to power is getting a little slippery. Muammar Gaddafi ain't what he used to be. So what's he going to do? Haul out into the middle of the Libyan desert and pitch his tent and put all of his security around him as protection? Where is Muammar Gaddafi going to go? Because clearly, while he remains in Libya, he is not only a threat to the Western forces, but he is a threat to the Libyan people. Now, apparently, the intelligence depicts a Libyan leader who doesn't feel safe anymore in Tripoli. That's good. Because of the stepped-up airstrikes by NATO aircraft and by battlefield gains by rebel forces. Now, according to senior U.S. national security official briefed on the recent reports, Gaddafi's done. He's run out of places to hide. He doesn't have any bunkers left. to enjoy. So I think it's time that rather than freeze funds that Obama is seeking to finish the job, I believe that possibly we need to, as a coalition force, grant another 90 days. And frankly, kick the bejeebus out of Gaddafi. Do it now, get it done. Because if it isn't done now, we will rue the day. If we don't take Gaddafi this time, he will become a force to be reckoned with. If not in his country, then mostly in the Arab world in general. Now, here's a story to ponder for a while, and after doing some research, all I can say is, holy cow, talk about the Russian flu. Apparently, scientists who helped Iran with the nuke plant died in a Russian plane crash. Yeah? Five scientists killed in Monday's Russian plane crash assisted in the development of Iran's nuclear plant, according to Russian security sources. Kill Supreme. Kill Supreme. Makes you wonder what's happening as far as that's going. Apparently, this isn't the first batch of scientists that have bitten the biscuit. Apparently, Russia's had quite a bit of bad luck regarding their nuclear scientists. Apparently, they've been dropping dead all over the place for the strangest of reasons. Now, out of that plane crash, apparently 8 passengers survived, which I thought was amazing that anybody would have survived. But they're blaming it on human error and technical malfunction, which is nothing, you know, unexpected, really. When you want to blame anything, always look for the human error. After all, the person that was the human error is not going to stand up and argue his case. All you have is the 30 seconds of flight recorder, if you've got that, and the black box to tell you what happened, and of course the wreck. So they can call it anything they want. But it's strange that all of these scientists are winding up dead by some very strange and peculiar actions. So another thing that makes you go, And I was surprised to read that Mexican soldiers apparently crossed the border into the U.S. recently. A convoy of 3 military trucks loaded with soldiers and weapons crossed the border at Bridge Number 2 in Laredo, Texas. Now, apparently they'd got lost, and they were going the wrong way. And our boys on the American side most certainly reminded them of where they were heading and how they were heading. Now, if you remember, this isn't the first time. There was last year, I believe, there was a couple of incursions by a helicopter. If you remember, it was buzzing the border towns there for a while. Now, Mr. Obama says he's going to focus more closely on drug trafficking and the drug trade in Mexico and South America. So I wonder what's happening there. I think the amount of money that's been poured into the fight of the drug trade has been horrendous. I seem to remember, wasn't it Nancy Reagan that started the Just Say No campaign? And gazillions of dollars were spent on that campaign, and I guess it went somewhere, but obviously not far enough. So Obama now going to take on the drug lords, I guess. Sounds like it to me. And apparently there was a news article last year regarding these drug lords possibly having contact with Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah. Could this be the next war front? Does anyone out there smell Wag the Dog or Canadian bacon? I mean, really? Don't you think? Something ain't right.
looking for more information on VOCR, check out our blog at VOCR2012.blogspot.com. Email the show, VOCR2012@gmail.com. You're listening to VOCR 2012 with Colin Knight. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although it takes all precautions to bring you quality information, it is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVNM 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
And here's something to dwell on as you get ready to head to work Monday morning. An asteroid the size of a tour bus will make an extremely close pass by Earth at about the time. But apparently it poses no threat to the planet. The asteroid will make its closest approach at 9:26 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on June the 27th and will pass just over 7,500 miles over the Earth's surface. So she's coming in hot. Now, I don't know. They say it's not going to do any damage, that it's wide enough, but everything's fine, and that it's going to do what it does and take off. But this thing is between, according to their estimates as best they can, this is between 29 and 98 feet wide. Now, according to NASA's Near-Earth Object Office at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, in Pasadena, California, an object of this size can be expected to come this close to Earth about every 6 years or so, on average. And NASA reiterate there is no chance that the 211MB will hit Earth, but scientists will use the close pass as an opportunity to study it with radar observations. So there you go. We've got a meteor coming in. And it's going to go 7,500 feet above the Earth's surface. It's coming in hot, and nobody's going to get hurt, and nothing's going to happen, and it's just going to be a big ball of fire, and that's all that's going to happen. We're okay, according to them. There is no chance that the 2011 MD will hit Earth, but scientists will use the close pass as opportunity to study it with radar observations. It'll be an interesting time. And, of course, with all the meteorite showers that are scheduled in from now until 2012, this will be one of those stories that'll end up on page 9, you know, right next to the lost dog section somewhere. Now, Republican negotiators finally walked out on the U.S. Vice President Joe Biden on how to reduce the country's debt. The U.S. Treasury Department has warned the U.S. risks default if Congress does not authorize more borrowing by August. Now, Mr. Biden said it is now up to President Obama and leaders of the Republicans and Democrats in Congress to decide on the way forward. The Republicans are resisting Democrat proposals, of course, for the Democrats' famous tax increases. So the clock is ticking. They say that such tax increases amounting to as much as $400 billion on corporations and the wealthy, according to the Washington Post, will stifle economic recovery. Now, the Democrats oppose the Republicans' proposals for steep cuts in health and retirement programs. But the two sides need to reach an agreement that will enable Congress to raise the $14.29 trillion debt ceiling before the 2nd of August, while the U.S. risks default on its debt. I never thought I would hear those words, that the United States could possibly default on the debt. Now, you know and I know that is not going to happen. We know that. The media and the financial pundits are pushing the buttons, squeezing the tube, so to speak. However, Barack Obama is going to have to come up with some conjure, some method of being able to raise this debt ceiling. Because without it, the United States will default on their debts, and that will not be pretty. The United States of America has a debt ceiling currently of $14.29 trillion. $14.29 trillion. That's scary.
To demand that their government respect their fundamental rights. I've stood with a gentleman from Indiana on behalf of human rights around the world. The Libyan people, who have been subject to the dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi, who has more blood on his hands, of Americans' blood on his hands, than any other person other than Osama bin Laden in the last three decades. The message will go to all the world. The message will go to Muammar Gaddafi. The message will go to our NATO allies. The message will go to every nation of the world. That America does not keep faith with its allies. America must lead. We must not equivocate. Such a course would encourage the enemies of peace, the bullies of the world. People around the world look to our country's strength in their struggle for democracy and basic human rights.
I think we have to carry out the UN resolution that calls for the right to protect, or the obligation and duty to protect. That's why the Libyan situation started. That needs to be completed. I would suggest that the Hastings resolution that gives a year is good in that it provides the necessary restrictions on the White House and on the military in the Libya operation, and basically puts the United States in a support position.
We will not police its streets or patrol its mountains indefinitely. That is the responsibility of the Afghan government, which must step up its ability to protect its people and move from an economy shaped by war to one that can sustain a lasting peace.
VOCR, the voice of the Canadian Rockies.
We've been in Afghanistan for 10 years at a cost of over $500 billion. In Iraq for 8 years at a long-term cost of at least $3 trillion. Those who told us the war in Libya would last days now want to extend it for another year at a total cost of billions. It is surreal that we could even be considering authorizing this war at a time when the government is collapsing in debt. We must put an end not only to the war in Libya, but we must put an end to the thinking that the Constitution is a doormat and that our constituents must simply bear the consequences of the misguided policies of this administration. Administration without this Congress having any say whatsoever.
Even the administration.
Wow. I mean, you know, Kucinich, when he gets going, he just doesn't know when to stop. And he slammed it home. And he made some very bold and very sincere statements. And I hope that the United States government pay attention to it, because it does seem like there needs to be some calmer brain, if you will, to deal with the issues at hand, because they're deep in their heart. I'm quite impressed with this Michelle Bachmann. She rolled out her presidential campaign with all the flair and flirtation of a seasoned boxing promoter. First, she stole her opponent's thunder by using a debate stage earlier this month to announce she filed her 2012 papers. Then she held off on formally announcing that bid for another 2 weeks. The formal kickoff is set for Monday in Iowa. The evening before the announcement, Bachmann is planning an informal meet and greet in Waterloo. And the week following the announcement will be spent touring early primary states. I think Bachmann is a contender to watch carefully. Something about that girl. Something about that girl that I like, and I'm not sure what it is. Can't put my finger on it. Story out of Reno, Nevada. Former Utah Republican Governor John Huntsman said Friday that he doesn't believe in Mormon faith will be an issue in his bid for the White House, adding that he's running for president, not to be the nation's spiritual guru. Huntsman spoke to reporters in Nevada during an hour-long campaign stop at the Reno Livestock Event Center, where the Reno Rodeo was about to begin. 3 days after formally announcing his candidacy, the former ambassador to China said his list of priority states includes the early caucus swing states of Nevada, while Republicans sided with former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney in 2008 in Nevada. So he's going after the big cheese. In Canada, a conservative bill ordering 48,000 Canada Post employees back to work cleared the House of Commons on Saturday after a marathon debate and several failed opposition attempts to amend it. Canada Post will be deemed an essential service and shall continue to bargain for a work contract by maintaining service to the Canadian people. What's happened to poor little Hugo Chavez? Man gets a little grumble in his tummy. He goes to Cuba for the operation, and he doesn't leave the farm. Speculation that Hugo Chavez could be suffering from a serious illness is putting attention on a predicament for the presidential allies. It's unclear who could step forward if he had to step down. Few Venezuelans are talking publicly about the possibility of Chavez leaving office, partly because top government officials and close relatives have repeatedly said the president is recuperating in Cuba following surgery there 2 weeks ago. Still, Chavez's silence and seclusion since the operation have spurred growing talk with his health, stirring fears among some supporters that their leader could be seriously ill. Nobody has heard of Chavez publicly speak since he told Venezuelan state television by telephone on June the 12th that he was quickly recovering from surgical procedures 2 days earlier from a pelvic abscess. He said medical tests showed no sign of any malignant illness. And yet, he's done the disappearing act. I wonder if he's busy trying to hide all of his money before he does a runner. What do you think? Possible? Well, sometimes justice is served, although it may take a while for justice to be served. Federal prosecutors are seeking a life sentence for a man convicted of orchestrating a $3 billion fraud while running what had been one of the nation's largest private mortgage companies. Defense lawyers, meanwhile, on Friday, asked for a term of no more than 15 years for Lee B. Farkas, 58, of Ocala, Florida, the former majority owner of the Florida-based Taylor Bean & Whitaker. Taylor Bean collapsed in 2009 when the fraud scheme unraveled, putting its 2,000 employees out of work. The fraud also contributed to the failure of Alabama-based Colonial Bank, which had been one of the country's 25 largest banks. Farkas faces up to 385 years after he was convicted in April of multiple fraud counts of masterminding what prosecutors say was one of the biggest bank frauds in U.S. history. In court papers filed on Thursday, prosecutors argued that Farkas should receive the maximum and compared his conduct to Bernie Madoff and other mass swindlers. What do you think, huh? Should he receive that amount of jail time? Is that deserving? Is that something that somebody that has robbed people of their life savings and on and on and on? Should he get jail time and never see the light of day again?
Looking for more information on VOCR? Check out our blog at vocr2012.blogspot.com. Email the show, vocr2012@gmail.com. You're listening to VOCR 2012 with Colin Knight. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, If you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although takes all precautions to bring you quality information, is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVNM 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
A great news piece came over my desk this morning, written by David Frum. Now, David Frum has a very unique style of writing. I enjoy him quite a lot, and he always has a good way of looking at life. And he wrote, in 2009, President Obama ordered an Afghan surge, sending more than 30,000 additional troops into Afghanistan. This week, Obama announced that the additional troops will withdraw by May 2012. The U.S. combat mission in Afghanistan will end by 2014. Now, of course, in Canada, our war is ending too. But unlike the Iraq surge of 2006-2008, the Afghanistan surge is not ending in success. The government does not control Afghanistan's territory. The Taliban have been neither defeated nor included in any political process. The Afghan security forces have been expanded, but they remain depressingly ineffective, and enlistment remains far below the one peacekeeper to 30 civilian rule of thumb for counterinsurgency. Odds are that when the U.S. surge ends, Afghanistan will revert to the conditions that prevailed before the surge, a weak government in Kabul, beset by a growing Taliban insurgency in the Pashtun parts of the country. So you have to wonder, what was the point? President Obama has explained his Afghan surge as driven by the need to deny a safe haven to Al-Qaeda. But as the whole world has spectacularly witnessed, Al-Qaeda has already found a new safe haven in Pakistan, a safe haven with better airline connections, more reliable phone service than their former rocky home in one of the world's most remote countries. In fact, the Afghan surge had the perverse effect of intensifying U.S. dependence on Pakistan. Back in 2001, George W. Bush declared that any government harboring Al-Qaeda terrorists would be deemed terrorist itself. In 2011, we discovered that somebody important in Pakistan was harboring Osama bin Laden himself, and nothing was happening. Nothing can happen, because without Pakistan, the U.S. cannot fight in Afghanistan. There's a management saying, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Building schools in Afghanistan is not the main thing. Improving the lives of ordinary Afghanis is not the main thing. Bestowing stable government upon Afghanistan is not the main thing. Eradicating Al-Qaeda is the main thing. I love David Frum's style of writing, and I appreciate all that he does. It's amazing. And it's a great piece of work that he puts out on a very continuous basis. He's a busy man, and he gets lots done, and we appreciate it. Well, the story, as we break in for the last 8 minutes or so, 12 minutes or so, having consolidated control of almost all of Libya's western mountains, rebel leaders say they are now pursuing a two-pronged strategy to bring down the government of Colonel Muammar al-Gaddafi. They're starving it of resources while covertly arming a growing guerrilla force within Tripoli itself. Though the rebels consolidated their hold on most of the Nafsu Mountains only about 2 weeks ago, officials from the opposition stronghold of Benghazi and an operative from the underground network in Tripoli were all available Friday night discussing strategies already underway. The mountain rebels showed a reporter an oil pipeline that they had recently cut off to Colonel Gaddafi's last working refinery in Zawiya. Now rebels have their sights on Giran, a city of about 85,000 that is the last Nafusa mountain town under Colonel Gaddafi's control. It is widely known to be a hotbed of opposition to Colonel Gaddafi and rose up swiftly at the start of the uprising. And if the rebels can take it within the next 3 weeks, as they hope to do, they will block a crucial supply route from Algeria to the south. So what do you think? Sounds like old battle plans, doesn't it? Sounds like World War II battles, cutting off supply lines and doing this and doing that. And Gaddafi's finished. He just won't lay down and die. So somebody is going to have to show him how that is done. And once he leaves Tripoli, I dare say that his time will be very, very limited on this earth. President Barack Obama has finally decided to release some oil from the emergency reserve. The move, reminiscent of Jimmy Carter, when things were going haywire for Carter in the Middle East. The United States and its allies will release 60 million barrels of emergency oil reserves to replace lost Libyan oil production and assure adequate supplies for the summer, officials announced on Thursday. The action accelerated the drop in oil prices that began in late April, taking them to levels not seen since Libyan oil exports were virtually halted by political turmoil 4 months ago. Italy, in particular, was dependent on Libyan crude, taking nearly a third of the 1.3 million barrels a day that Libya was exporting before hostilities began. Other European nations like France, Germany, and Spain were also large buyers of oil from Libya. Of the total amount of oil to be released, about half would come from reserves in the United States, with the rest to be provided by the other 27 industrialized nations who belong to the International Energy Agency. And negotiations for the coordinated response have apparently been going on in secret for weeks. Similar unified action was taken in 1991 at the outbreak of the Gulf War. But more importantly, the release of the emergency release of oil reserve is a tactical move designed to lower the price of gasoline for the summer so that the average person will be able to at least have a little bit of a breather on their fuel consumption. But the big problem will be heading for the fall, when the weather turns from a beautiful summer and an interesting fall to winter, when the heating oil demand picks up. That will be the tell of the tale for the oil industry. And although I can understand why Barack Obama has released the oil at this time, it would have probably been in his best interest had he released half of the oil at this time and the other half at the end of summer. I think that would have been more apropos instead of releasing the whole 60 million barrels in one flood. And the reason I say that is we are a gluttonous society. We will drink oil until we can't take any more oil. And we will never conserve, we will always consume. And that's always been the problem regarding the oil and the reserves that we have on Earth, is that we are a consumer organism, if you will. And what we consume and the effluent waste that we leave behind is astounding. And we're actually, for the last several thousand years, building on our own garbage. And sooner or later, we're not going to be able to do that no more. We're a very wasteful country, very wasteful world. And can we turn that around? Well, in the grand scheme of things, we have bigger fish to fry, I guess. The economy is in tatters. Not just the American economy, the world economy. The whole formula for doing business is at risk. And I don't think it's ever been a greater danger for the peace and society of the Western world, the situation we find ourselves in at this moment in time with the financial demise of partners. We have some difficult times ahead. And I'm hoping that Mother Earth is kind to us during those times. We take for granted everything that we have in life, the abilities that we have, the ability to speak and walk, talk and run and laugh and enjoy. We have the ability to eat favorite food and drink our favorite drinks. Some people don't have those abilities. But we give thanks for what we have, and we forget that they can be taken away from us in the blink of an eye. And as we move into the final 4 minutes of the show, let me just remind you that the electricity running your computer right now can be turned off very quickly and very easily. Imagine what would happen to our society in general if suddenly the electricity was turned off, either by a natural cause, a disaster, or a terrorist act. What is Plan B? Do you have a Plan B? What would be your course of action? Your communication systems are down. You have no electricity to run anything. Your vehicle won't even run. What is Plan B? Do you have enough supplies? Do you have enough supplies for a natural disaster in your region? How about your first aid kit? Do you have enough in your first aid kit that's current that you could use to offer triage in dangerous times in your neighborhood? All of these things must be taken into account, but also you have to keep your eye on the ball, our fabulous politicians. Because anybody that will spend $1 billion to become president of the United States for a job that pays $500,000 a year for a maximum of 8 years, to me, that's a bad deal. To me, that's a bad deal. So what do you get for your candidate pay? When you give a donation to a candidate, what do you get? I'm not sure what you get. I know what you don't get. You don't get peace of mind. Promises kept. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You do this for me, I'll make sure you do this, or you get this. I thought bribery was illegal. Maybe it's not. Or maybe it's not called bribery. Maybe they have another fancy word that hasn't hit the legal dictionary yet. Whatever it is, it smells of rat. $500,000 a year for a maximum of 8 years. $1 billion to get that job. Who in their right mind would want to take that job on? Seriously. Who in their right mind would want to take that on for $500,000 a year? And spend $1 billion of somebody's money doing it. Yeah, I don't get it either. But we shall see as the politics roll on. We'll continue looking at all of these these bright stars that are coming up that are going to take on Barack Obama if, in fact, he runs. So I guess we will see exactly what the pecking order will be. But watch Backman. Interesting concept. Yeah, Michelle Backman, I think, has got something going. Not quite sure what it is.
Hey, guys. Got a minute? You know, I'm sure we all have friends that are having tough times, either financially or in their marriage or in their general relationships in life. And but for the grace of God go I. Well, I have friends like that. As they look to me for advice, I look to the heavens for some form of divine inspiration so I can please the masses, I guess. And it doesn't always happen. So what I would like to say to you tonight is, if you have friends, embrace them. If you have loved ones, cherish them. If you have acquaintances, respect them. And if you have love, show them. God bless you all. Good night.
This has been a Night Talk production in association with Terra Chat Networks and BlogTalkRadio.com. Blessings on your household.